Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hey everyone, it's Healthy Gut Girl, Catalina Martone, and this is Stuff Your Doctor Should Know. I'm coming to you live from deep inside your large intestine. And we all know why I'm here, and it's because I teach everyone to get well from the gut first, because it all begins in the gut. So, you know, I have a spectacular topic of conversation today with a wonderful guest, an old friend, a good friend, someone who has the same foundational education that I do with the infamous and amazing Dr. Robert Marshall. We both studied with him, we both worked with him, and worked for him. And she's incredible because she took his very amazing diet that he was working on, the Biofield diet, and she kind of made it her own. And she's turned it into this oil-free, fantastic diet. She's someone who is really specific with food. She's very, very good with teaching people how to get rid of refined oils, and she teaches why that's so important. And something that I really, really, one of the main reasons I wanted to have her on today was because of her journey with her dental health and her knowledge behind the importance of dental health. And so that's why I'm having her on today as well. And you're really going to be just blown away by this information. We all need to really place extreme importance and priority on our dental health. And she's going to share with us why. And, you know, I wanted to also let everyone know that I'm still running a special on the Total Gut Makeover. And in the Total Gut Makeover, which you can reach by going to healthygutgirl.com, there's a huge coupon discount on there, huge. And there is a document in there called Making the Right Dental Choices. And in this document, which is a document that was prepared by Dr. Robert Marshall, it tells you all about how you can go about finding a holistic or a biodentist, what to ask your dentist when you're in search for one, you know, how to look for the right person for you. It's very difficult to find a dentist, but this document really breaks down the different questions you can ask and how important it is to ask about the way that they do amalgam removal, what kind of materials they use when using implants, how they go about doing root canals, and if they're the ones that do root canals, what type of x-rays they use, what type of disinfecting methods that they use. All these questions and concerns are in this document, and it is extremely important, this information, for you to be able to find the right dentist, because these days the standard of care is not good enough. It's not good enough. And so check it out on the Total Gut Makeover. There's so many different documents and so much information in the Total Gut Makeover that help you to make good decisions and guide you along the way through your journey to get healthy and thrive. So anyway, let's get on with this. I'm excited about this hour with Tanisha Duncan. You're gonna love her. All right. So yay, Tanisha. I'm so glad you're here with me. We've been trying to get this together for a while now.
Forever, it seems like.
And here we are. So you and I have known each other for how long now? I'm going to say
I would say 5 years? Yeah, at least. I think the first year was, as you could call it, a long distance over the phone relationship before even being in Santa Monica.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. And so I mentioned in the intro to everyone that we worked together with Dr. Marshall and that we actually were students of his prior to working together, and that we have such a similar background in our education and outlook on sort of, as Dr. Marshall used to say, the main event. What really is the main event? What is it that is at the root of all of our issues? And I wanted to have you on here for a couple reasons. One of them is because, as you know, I am such a huge proponent of dental
health when it comes to addressing all health issues. Like it's in my intake forms. I know it's in yours, which is, have you addressed your dental, you know, issues? Do you have dental issues? All of this. And not only do you have personal experience with clients and whatnot, as do I, but you have a personal experience of your own to share. So I want to get into that right away. But what is your perspective on the whole dental stuff, just so everyone knows?
Well, from my personal experience with it, it literally completely changed my entire paradigm from what I thought I had learned about dental through Dr. Marshall. And it's one perspective to learn about it, to see it with clients, and then it's a completely different perspective to actually go through it and experience it. More than anything, dental is number one, more than anything in the body, because everything goes back to the teeth. As Dr. Marshall, as you remember, he would always say, the teeth are the windows to the soul. they're connected to every single organ and gland. And if somebody has got a chronic dental infection, that really needs to be looked at, and it really comes before everything else. So that's really my perspective on that now.
So, I mean, I've had instances in my practice and where people have literally been sitting across from me at my desk. And in fact, I remember one such instance working and sitting at the very desk that you ended up sitting at as well, where someone was sitting across from me and I could smell their breath from my seat. And it wasn't like I had garlic for, you know, lunch, or I haven't eaten it all and you've got that weird funky smell. No, it was specifically this sort of infection.
Yes.
And I knew it was pervasive. I could tell by the swollen jowls that they had. I could tell by their symptoms and what they shared with me. And they were about to drop some, you know, money, like not just with my fee, but also with, you know, the potential supplement regimen and the, you know, diet changes and everything. And I thought, and I knew they had money issues, and I actually said to them, you know what, I'm going to do you a favor here. I'm going to give you a digestive program that's super simple, you know, hydrochloric acid and digestive enzymes and probiotics, a couple diet changes, and then I don't want to see you again because I want you to save your money and I want you to go handle your dental issues. And they completely turned red in the face. They were super embarrassed. I was embarrassed. I was uncomfortable. A year later, they came back into the office and thanked me because they had pervasive infection that they didn't even know they had. And they were so much better for it after chronic sinus infections because of it. So I saw multiple things after that where I was just like, it's non-negotiable, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I totally understand. And to be really honest, there are very few people that I've actually met that can detect that odor from the mouth. And something that I've noticed, the cleaner that my body has become, the more sensitive I am to not only the smell and the odor of a dental infection, but what that actually looks like in somebody's face and in their physical body. And like you're saying, the inflammation that is stored in their entire face from having that infection. And that very same desk that you sat in, that I ended up moving into, there were countless people that would literally be sitting in front of me concerned about one thing about their health. And they came in because they want to address this or they want to address that. But as they're speaking to me, their mouth is just reeking of this dental infection. And it's like, actually, if I may make a suggestion to you, this is what I feel that you should really focus on, because this is trumping over everything else.
It's a tough subject because first of all, it's difficult to, you know, bring that to someone's attention to actually say, you know, hey, this is something that you have going on and I'm aware of it because I can smell it. And, you know, Charlie has a real sensitivity. My husband, Charlie, has a real sensitivity to that exact smell as well. And I feel so bad for him, you know, because he's a chiropractor and he works in a small office and he's with people all day. And I'm always like, babe, you've got to say something. And he's like, I can't do it. He's like, I'm so focused on their healing in other ways that it's, you know, and it's not my, you know, it's out of my wheelhouse to even bring it up. And I just say, well, you know, what if it was you? Wouldn't you want a client to say, hey, Dr. Charlie, I love you so much, but you know, he's like, no, I wouldn't. He's like, I wouldn't want you to do it.
And the cool thing is too, is that when you work on your teeth and you really work on your dental and you remove the infection and you remove all of the metals that are in the mouth and you go through that entire process, when you do address that dental work, your entire musculoskeletal system comes back, where the frequency for adjustments or alignments or whatever you're working with your health practitioner, you get your teeth addressed and all of a sudden your body comes back over into proper alignment. And it might take, you know, anywhere from 1 or 2 years for the body to readjust, but the teeth are bone. They're attached to your mandible, which are attached to the skull and the cranium and the sutures. So if you can remove the infection in time, all of that comes back together.
I mean, you know, what's interesting to me is that a lot of dentists don't even really realize that. They don't even make that correlation or connection. And it's hard to find good dentists, which we'll get to all that in a bit as well. But and on that same note, in regards to having infection in the mouth, you know, that infection, and people think, oh, okay, you think infection, you think, I don't know, a rotten or a cavity in the tooth. But really, it can be a tooth that has a crown on it, that the tooth is in decent shape now, but the food that's collecting underneath that crown, that, and let me tell you, these days, the standard of care is, you know, that crowns can and do have space in between them like that. And you can see a lot of times that food getting, you know, pulled out of there by a dentist, and it's just sitting in that space, rotting.
And you can't even see it. On the microscopic level, you can't even see the food and the bacteria and particles that have been building up for however many years you've had that crown.
And then that leaks into the bloodstream slowly, low grade. You don't have any pain. Maybe you don't even smell anything, or you floss and you don't notice anything, and all is fine for, well, you think it is.
Right.
But then that infection is leaking into the bloodstream. And then as it gets advanced, this not only, like you were saying, affects structurally your alignment, but it also affects the level of acidity in the muscle tissues and the tissues of the body, making them stiff and, you know, creating this like rigidity. So I thought of that because I was thinking in terms of, you know, getting adjusted, getting your neck adjusted and how stiff you might feel. And you don't make the correlation between, could my dental health be contributing to that stiffness in my neck?
Absolutely. 100%. I want to bring something up. When, so my dental journey really began right about now, exactly a year ago. I had 4 fillings in my mouth and I had 3 dead teeth. And to have 1 dead tooth in your mouth is devastating in itself. Like your immune system, your entire body is just being hit 24 hours a day on a daily basis, leaking infection through, like you said, throughout the entire bloodstream, communicating with all the organs and glands, digestion, your bowel movements, everything is affected. Once I had gotten that final tooth taken out, which was the catastrophic tooth out of everything, but it had to be the last. Once that last tooth was taken out, my body was able to really move into a state of, I want to say relaxation, but at the same time, it moved into another stage of fight or flight. And it wasn't until I had gotten that tooth out to where I had began experiencing herpes in my spine. And my spine would lock up. Yeah. My spine would lock up after every single, you want to say, bout of stress. If I would experience a high amount of stress because my body was still recalibrating and adjusting, I would lock up. And I didn't realize what was happening. And my uncle is an incredible chiropractor that I go and I see, and he had checked me out and he's like, whoa, you've got a herpes flare up in your spine. And I was like, what? No way. This has never happened to me before. You know, I'm young. I'm not in my 50s or 60s, you know, which is most common. But this didn't start until I had removed all the infection from my mouth. And so it was a total shock to me. And so far, it's happened 3 times since all of the teeth have been taken out. But each time it gets less and less.
Have we talked about this part of your journey? Because you know that that's the thing I've been suffering from since I was born.
This is new. This is only 5 months old, and it's still a new aspect of my journey. Actually, which at first it was like, you know, what the heck is going on here? I shouldn't be debilitated for 2 weeks. And that was my first round.
And oh my God.
The second round was easier. The third round actually just completed, and it was way easier. I didn't lock up as long. I only locked up for maybe a day and a half versus the first time of 2 weeks.
Right.
And nobody understands that. And for your listeners, they might be thinking, well, wait a minute. You got your teeth taken out. You got your dental infection addressed, and then you got herpes. Well, it doesn't really sound like you got better.
This isn't encouraging in any way.
And that would be common logic. But if you really think about it, when you have such chronic infection in the body, whether it's in your teeth or anywhere else, your nervous system is shut down. It doesn't know how to respond. And so it keeps things dormant. And then you remove whatever the contaminant or pathogen or infection is. Then your nervous system can breathe and it can operate in the manner that it needs to do and triage, okay, what's most important, what's not, and get out whatever it needs to get out.
Wow. I mean, I certainly 100% hope that's the case, right?
Yeah.
I wonder sometimes, I remember seeing the film, the Gerson film. It's kind of old. Mm-hmm. Do you remember it?
Yeah,
it's about,
totally.
It's called The Truth. Oh shoot. It'll come to my mind. But, and they state a fact in there, and I'll never forget it. They say that, you have to be very careful when having your amalgams removed, mm-hmm. because 60% of people who get their fillings taken out or their amalgam fillings taken out will get some sort of autoimmune within the first year of having them removed, mm-hmm. which is why it's so incredibly important to be highly mineralized,
yes.
and, you know, do, you know, have the gut in order and everything so that the body can chelate whatever. Even if you go to the best dentist in the world, there still is going to be toxicity released into the bloodstream. There's still going to be metals, particles of metal that are going to be released into the system. So that, you know, that's unavoidable. Now, how to mitigate that will be determined by how good your dentist is, right?
Right.
But it's going to happen. And so sometimes I feel like people get sick after getting their fillings out because there's an amount of heavy metals, or there's an amount of infection that's been, like, the floodgates have been opened into the system and the body needs to get rid of it.
Right.
And if that happens, the body, the inflammatory level in the body goes up, and then you can have these sort of crazy immune responses, or, you know, a virus would be super happy in that kind of environment.
Right.
But the way yours is occurring is sounding like it is kind of having it's working itself out.
Yeah, it is. And the only way that I know that is just because it gets easier every time.
Mm-hmm. What are your symptoms exactly when you say lock up your spine?
Okay, sure. So let's just say the symptom starter is an abrupt amount of stress. And as every single one of us are constantly learning how to navigate through the course of stress, and everybody's stress threshold is always going to be different. Mm-hmm. So mine will have to start with a catastrophic bout of stress all in one sitting, and I'll go to sleep, and all of a sudden I wake up, and it feels like my, maybe T4.
You're giving T4, me chills because this is exactly how it starts.
So my T4, and for your listeners that don't know, the thoracic spine and the vertebrae number four of that region. And it will feel like someone just took a little hammer and a chisel and just decided to go to the side and just tap that thing out to the left. And if I turn my neck or turn any part of my spine, I can only go to a certain degree and it locks. And it's painful. And it's like, well, wait a minute. I can turn the other direction and I'm okay. So the onset will start after I wake up. And then it gets worse. And this is, again, on the first phase. It gets worse. And I'm like, wow, my range of motion is decreasing. Okay, this is really not good. Then the chills will set in. Mm. And I'm like, okay, am I getting the flu? What's going on here? Mm-hmm. And then the next thing you know, it's 2 weeks later and you haven't been able to work out. You can't really move. You can't bend over. You feel like you've just got this vertebrae that's just lodged and keeping you feel trapped in your own body. And that's exactly what it feels like. You're trapped. You can't move.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's amazing. I know there's a name for it, and it's called Malloret's meningitis, and it's a doctor named Dr. Malloret's who discovered this this type of herpes. That's the common denominator with it is that I should say that the symptoms are just what you described, flu-like symptoms. There's also this sense of rebound pain, which mm-hmm. like, you know, you can't run for certain, but just taking like a step down off of a, like say you're walking down steps, but that jarring sensation sends like a rebound throughout that region of the spine. For me, it radiates all the way down into my hamstrings, like the tightness, all the tightness really radiates. And then I get a migraine from it as it works its way up. But it does seem to start in the same exact place, which is in the thoracic mm-hmm. region below C7, T1, all that area.
Right.
And it's fascinating. I mean, I had no idea we were going to actually talk about this because it's interesting. I wanted to do an entire segment just on the herpes virus and how insidious it is and how people don't even realize they have it. And you don't necessarily have to test for it. Like you can test for it and it'll not show up, but it depends on where it's exacerbating. Like
right.
it can, you know, it's living there in your nervous system, in that sort of like central nervous system area, and can create these bouts of like encephalitis or meningitis.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So crazy.
And the crazy part is that once you identify it and you identify the triggers, you then have to step into an emotional aspect and learn for what you need to do to repattern yourself so that you don't put yourself in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's that's the work.
That's the trick. That's the work. You know, I suffered with it my whole life, and I've definitely been able to handle, and I know what the triggers are. There's a lot of hormonal triggers. There's, you know, when my estrogen is high, I definitely can trigger it. Extreme exercise, like being very, very active can trigger it. And of course, but then sometimes I'll go through entire, phases of my life that are highly stressful and I'll be fine, you know? So it's really kind of, yeah, it just depends on, I think my level of, I think it's my level of my pH, like how
sure.
mineralized am I? But I went to the UK and I saw a homeopath, and he was the first person to prescribe something to me that was actually made the biggest impact. And that's something I'm still on now. And those are just all homeopathics.
That's
so,
great.
Yeah, it's all addressing viral issues. And he said the problem with viruses in the body is that most of us have more than one. Most of us have multiple forms of the herpes virus mm-hmm. and multiple other viruses, is that they're always competing with one another. So you could take something that might be specifically geared towards an antiviral like the herpes virus, but then there's all these other viruses that you have. So it's almost like you're juggling balls in the air, and it's the whole viral component of the body needs to be addressed.
Sure.
So
makes sense.
So in homeopathic way, he was able to, you know, affect that so far. So I've gone, it'll be a full year that I've gone without even a version of it. Because sometimes I'll get it. It'll just be like a couple of days.
Sure.
I have, yeah. So if I can make it to February, I'm going to celebrate.
Oh, that's fantastic.
I know.
That's awesome.
So anyway, in correlation to dental stuff, so what are you doing we're going to work backwards here because
sure.
I want to talk about that dental journey that you had, but what are you doing now besides handling the triggers? What else do you feel like dental-wise to keep, to sort of as a protocol for you?
Sure. I'm a huge advocate of food and the quality of food. My entire introduction to health years and years ago really began with that. After working with my dentist from stage one and really seeing what my current dental situation is, I actually should have been way farther into the black hole. And he was actually pretty surprised to see how well I was doing for how bad the infection was. I wasn't in crazy amount of agonizing pain. I was feeling it in a way that was definitely stunting me from my potential. And even he attributed all to the food. And I was able to break my diet down into what I ate, how I ate. I'm a huge advocate of coffee enemas, and I will never let go of that. However, I will always advocate there's always a time to begin them, and there is a level of preparation in regards to coffee enemas. And I have to say that if it weren't for eating such a clean diet, obviously staying mineralized, getting all those good essential fatty acids in to support my entire body, my brain, my nerves, and other foods and minerals to support my kidneys and my adrenals. But for me, I am a firm believer in really enforcing the coffee enema protocol to keep my liver filtering and keep my liver clean, because the liver is going to absorb all of that toxicity of infection, all the residual from draining and getting that stuff out of the mouth, and the burden that that liver has to go through, and how that affects the gallbladder and digestion and the entire cascade. Definitely going to go back to the quality of food. I also am an advocate of eating and consuming no processed oils. I've been living an oil-free lifestyle for, I think, now about, gosh, I think 3.5 years now.
Wow.
And really having that being a huge proponent. I mean, if that last tooth that I had mentioned that took a year to actually get to, if the timing of that tooth was not right on and they were to remove that tooth, my entire sinus cavity would have collapsed. And that was pretty shocking for me to hear. So we had to really trace the imaging of that section of my mouth, that quadrant of my mouth. It was my upper right quadrant, and it was a molar in there. I forget the tooth number. But we had to monitor that with 3D imaging. And what's fascinating, and even my dentist had noted, when I had first went in there and got my imaging done, there was this like giant bulb right up in the sinus cavity that was just holding a bunch of fluid and pus. And so he said, okay, you know, we can't pull this tooth out. It's gonna rip the tissue. The tissue's just gonna come out like jelly, like paper mache, like soggy paper mache. Your sinus cavity is gonna collapse, and we can't do that. We have to wait. We need to see what protocols you can enforce so that you can come back here in anywhere from 4 to 6 months, and let's see where your imaging is at. It'll give us an idea, and then we can potentially extract the tooth.
I mean, okay, I have to just hold the phone for a minute, because there's so many shocking things about what you just said. And one of the things is, how many dentists are qualified and good enough to actually be working at the level that your dentist is working at, A? B, how many people out there go and get dental work done and get these types of teeth pulled in spite of the fact that they have these issues, and then wonder why they're having such massive sinus issues for the rest of their lives?
Exactly.
Or end up having, you know, much bigger problems because of it, because of the, and I'm going to say negligence, because I feel like we should be much further along now in our dental technology than we are. And I think the standard of care out there is poor. I think that people are being put in situations like the one you're talking about that you weren't put in because your dentist was so good, but that could have happened, and end up with bills up the wazoo that they can't afford. I mean, dental work in itself is ridiculously expensive to begin with, but then you have these things going wrong. You and I both know of my recent client that I had through Dr. Marshall, and, you know, who recently passed. And his biggest challenge his entire life, and his wife's challenge from the moment I met them, and still friends with his wife, and was, you know, the journey that the two of them had with their dental issues. And they were seeing some of the best dentists, according to the biodentist world, who actually, I think, failed them. I think the things that they discovered later because of the negligence was shocking, and could have easily have led to the worsening of his condition and ultimately his death.
I'm right there with you. I totally know exactly what you're talking about.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, okay. So your dentist said, all right, we're going to follow this with 3D imaging. Mm-hmm. And so you're going to work on your protocol some more, and you're going to continue to support your system. And then we're going to keep checking until what, the reduction of infection went down?
Shrink that bulb.
Wow.
In my sinus, because it was just too large to fit through the cavity that the tooth was actually sitting in within the jaw.
So the root of her upper molar, and this is common in a lot of people, I had a similar thing. The root of those molars, of those upper teeth, lead up into the sinus cavity. They don't lead by a specific tube. They're not meant to go up there. But when the infection is pervasive enough, it'll get pushed from the bloodstream, from the mucous membranes, into where it's going to go, which is a place where there's space.
Yes.
And that is exactly up into the sinus cavity.
Yes. And an important thing I should mention, this tooth that was destroying my sinus cavity was a 15-year-old root canal that was placed in my mouth when I was about 10 years old. Okay.
Mm-mm-mm.
So this is a really old root canal, and I love the way that my dentist explained it, which I had never heard before. And he said, okay, when you have a root canal, you've got dead roots. The tooth is hopefully actually dead, and your dentist didn't just do a root canal just because. Mm-hmm. So when you chew and you have a root canal and you're chewing on the side of the mouth that root canal is on, there's so much bacterial buildup, like Catalina and I have discussed, bacteria just lodges up in there. You've got so much bacteria in that tooth that's been sitting there and festering and putrefying and fermenting for years that every single time you chew on that root canal, you want to envision it no different than you've got a toilet bowl at home full of feces. And you're plunging that thing back and forth, and you're just not stopping.
You painted a good picture there. I think everybody is looking for their local biodentist right now.
And literally, that is how he explains it, to get his point across.
Wow.
Saying, get that thing out of your mouth, because all you're doing is you're just infecting your entire bloodstream every single time you chew. So for the time being that I had to work on that infection and get that infection bulb to shrink, I had to consciously be aware, okay, Tanisha, don't chew on that side of your mouth because you're just spreading your infection. Mm. And that might be tricky for people who have root canals on both sides of their mouth. If they're in a situation where they have more than one, then that becomes a little tricky. But yeah,
it's overwhelming. You know, it's, I feel bad for people who are listening to this, who are like, yeah, I've got multiple root canals and I know I have a dead tooth and I've got issues and I can't afford this. And, you know, and here I am making myself more and more sick. You know, I was thinking about, another factor, which is, you know, the bottom teeth. So when you have root canals, so don't think you're safe just because your root canals and your, all your problems are in your bottom teeth, because that stuff gets plunged into your thyroid, into your parathyroid. And parathyroid, as you and I both know really well, because it's been ingrained in our brain,
but
parathyroid controls, governs bone metabolism. And so people who are, and then of course the thyroid, we all know what the thyroid does. And that is a major, how many women and men are dealing with thyroid conditions and they have no idea that the thyroid condition is being triggered by the toxicity. And the thyroid and parathyroid, as you know, are little sponges. They're just little sponges that sit there and are absorbing this, which is why radiation is such a big deal, because radiation collects at the thyroid because it is a sponge. It just sits there like soaking stuff up.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you have these bottom teeth that are infected in any way, that leaks into the bloodstream, going down the neck, going down into the thyroid and the parathyroid, and even just as bad, the thymus and the lungs and the heart. And this is just as serious. You know, it doesn't just have to go up into the sinus cavity.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm glad that you mentioned that, because it reminded me when I had my first thermography scan, and maybe that was about 7 years ago. And I had this thermal imaging which is much safer than x-rays, for those of you that don't know what it is. It's thermal imaging, where it detects the amount of temperature that's exposed in areas of the body. So you can see where there's heat generated. And if there's heat generated in that area, you can see, okay, well, you know what? Maybe this is a potential infection site that's experiencing a lot of inflammation, and the body's trying to work with something here. So about 7 years ago, I had my first thermal scan of my face. And I remember asking the technician, oh, like, what is this, like, straining stuff? Like, it looked like there were like watercolor paint coming out of my teeth down my neck. And she said, oh, looks like you have some dental infections and your teeth are draining.
Wow.
And at the time I was very negligent. I went, oh, not a big deal. Dental, not a big deal. My dentist has never, you know,
right.
Told
my dentist
me to,
never
to do anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, and unfortunately, we do trust our dentist so much that we start out with to be in a situation later where it's like, wow, my dentist unfortunately wasn't properly educated, nor did they seek out the truth in regards to dental work, which influenced me and my health. And there are so many people in that situation.
I mean, so many. There are more people in that situation than that are not. You know what I mean? Like, most people, it's just, it's a daunting subject, really. But it's also, you know, knowledge. And of course, this is going to help people to seek out dentists like the one that you found, which we need to share his info and probably put it in the show notes
after. Absolutely.
So let's go back to food for a minute, and let's talk about your choice to do the oil-free. I consider, when I think of anyone who's an expert in this area, I think of you. And I think, you know, Dr. Marshall, of course, it wasn't his idea. This diet has been around, but I feel like you really mastered it. And so I just want you to tell people what the diet is and how, you know, what it entails.
Sure. Because
people seem to think that oil-free means fat-free, which couldn't be further from the truth.
Yeah. And that's a huge misconception, and I'll be the first to tell you that when I heard oil-free directly from the mouth of our mentor, Dr. Marshall, and even his wife, Dr. Forbes, I took that to the very, very extreme. And for the first 60 days, I literally didn't consume any fat, because that's what I interpreted as, oh, okay, oil-free, so that means no fat at all. That's a big fat lie. Don't do that. It does not work. You can really potentially hurt yourself doing that. When I say I live an oil-free lifestyle, I literally don't consume any processed oils. So, and that actually includes coconut oil for me personally, but olive oil, canola oil, definitely. We don't want that. Anything that's in an oil form, it just, for me, doesn't exist. I don't add it to food. I teach my clients literally how to cook oil-free, and I'm a huge advocate of eating whole foods that have fat in them. So any foods that have fat, avocado, nuts, and seeds, and of course going through the proper preparation method of making sure that you're soaking and dehydrating, but that's a whole nother conversation. What I love to remind people about is, when you do choose to eliminate oil from your diet, you're removing something that has no team. And I also like to relate the concept, there is no I in team. When you look at a whole food that might have the entire team, all the cofactors and substrates, all the parts that make the food that are required for metabolic breakdown and to uptake nutrition, all of that can be found in a whole food itself. When you separate the oil from that whole food, you just have the eye. You don't have all the team members. You don't have everything that's needed in order to break it down, in order to digest it, in order for the body to uptake it. It kind of just becomes a sludge in the body. And I like to compare that to an oil spill in the ocean. I'm an ocean lover and I love metaphors, so I hope all this makes sense to you. But when there's a big rig out in the ocean, you've got this giant vessel and it just spills oil all over the ocean. And what happens? You've got the animals, which I relate to the cells in the body, that they just become layered up in this gunk of oil. They slow down, they become tired, they can't breathe, and eventually they die. So when you as a human are consuming these oils, you're introducing this sludge that really creates a lot of stagnancy in the body. The blood gets thicker. The viscosity of the blood gets thicker. Your blood delivery and travel speed slows down. The filtration of the liver and the gallbladder slows down because it's got to somehow find a way to break down and digest this really thick, gooey, oily substance that doesn't have the entire team with it in order to be broken down. Digestion slows down. If you follow digestion or if you know anything about digestion, you know that it takes longer for fat to break down through the digestive system. So if you consume something that's a whole food and it's very rich in fat, it's going to digest differently than oil just itself, because the whole food itself has the team. It has everything that's needed in order to break it down. But you introduce the oil into the body and it's just like an oil spill. Okay, what do we do with this? How do we filter this out? And everything gets sticky and gooey and just slow.
So when you say processed oils, because some people think, oh, refined. Well, I can get an olive oil that isn't refined. Mm-hmm. You mean any oil that is extracted from, I like to say from its mother, from its source.
Sure.
It's extracted. So that we're also talking about, are we talking about ghee and butter and raw butter and things like that?
Raw butter and ghee, I personally consume. I do consume those. And I only started recently introducing them in maybe about 7 months ago, based on just my own experiment, just to see how my body responded to that. And even with clients as well, you know, wanting to introduce that back into their system just to see how they did. And also for gut health reasons as well, to sustain the lining of the gut. If they were moving through anything, if they had inflammatory reactions for something, but they just needed something to coat their stomach and gentle with probiotics and by using raw butter, I'm actually an advocate of that again, mm-hmm. where for that transitional time of maybe the first 2 years, I had kind of really cut it out. But when I do mean oil, I do mean any and all oils. I do. Mm-hmm. Which I don't really like to get into too much, but the caloric aspect of it as well. And it's like, okay, for clients that are in a state of carrying too much body weight, how much of that is just trapped toxicity, and I hate to say it, but trapped oil in the tissue as well. Mm-hmm. And for those who are looking to achieve a healthy weight level, when they can eliminate the processed oil, it's like, gosh, their bodies just bounce back. I mean, I have a gentleman right now who is 65 and has come from a starting diet of understanding that Panda Express is healthy.
Oh, boy.
And, wow, I had to really swallow that one and really have patience for that. And 5 weeks later into his transition, he's a brand new human being. Brand new clarity in his eyes. His hair is growing faster. His skin is bright. His skin is moisturized. His digestion is better. He had an esophageal condition where it was just chronically inflamed, and it was like he was constantly getting this acid reflux. And he transitioned his diet, eliminated the oil, and he's pretty much, I would say, 85% back to normal. And wow. It's 5 weeks later and he's 65.
Wow. So I always like to be in subjects like this. I like to kind of play the devil's advocate because I'm a fan, but I also can hear people out there saying, you know, the Mediterranean diet has been around, one of the oldest diets that we even know of. How can all those people, and it's like so good for your heart, and it's
sure.
And how can that be bad for us? How can it be bad? And all of a sudden we're saying, oh, it's terrible for us.
Right. I think a lot of that has to do with quality. I'm a huge advocate of quality. And I also am a firm believer of culture and bloodline. I won't get into it in, you know, this conversation, but blood typing, I would say in the past year, I've really gotten into blood typing as well. But in regards to quality and the quality of oil and the aspect of rancidification, when was this bottle of oil manufactured and produced? How is this oil stored? Has this oil been sitting on a shelf for 6 months or
above your hot stove?
Right, exactly. And so you have the rancidity factor. Is that oil just totally dead? And what's really neat is when you eliminate oil from your diet and you're just in a situation to where you can't avoid oil in something because you're out at somebody's house or you're out to dinner somewhere, but you're making the best choice for you in this current situation. And you can actually learn how to identify rancid oil versus oil that's not. If I were to go to Morocco on a vacation where they have the best of the best olive oil, I'm not going to deny myself from enjoying a culture. Mm-hmm. And I know that because it's right there from the land, it's going to be way more fresh than if it were imported over here to the US and it's been sitting over in, you know, a grocery store, a health food store. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of one of those situations where you got to give and take. But in to answer your question directly, I will always say quality over anything.
I agree 100%. And I feel like, you know, when people say things like, you know, we've been eating gluten all our lives, you know, it's like, you know, since the beginning of man, we've been eating flour, you know,
right.
And it's like there's no reason in that. There's no rational discussion in that. That's just this big broad stroke that says we've been doing it forever, so why can't we keep doing it? When things have changed so much, you know, if you were to take a wheat berry from, you know, the late 1800s and a wheat berry from now, and you were to examine the two, it would be a different species entirely. Probably it would be a completely different creature. Right.
Exactly.
And so one thing also I'll add to that about the garbage oils is that, you know, Panda Express compared to, like, you know, making a fresh salad at home and using some olive oil that might be, you know, now I know the oil-free diet means no oil, but if someone were like, you know, if someone were like, well, I'd like to clean up my diet with some of these garbage oils, that would be the other option, would be, you know, increase the quality of the oil that you're consuming, exactly. Perhaps, and, you know, and that will make a little bit of a difference.
Yeah.
But another big thing, and I advocate this diet in my estrogen dominance support group on Facebook, because a lot of women and men can't lose weight to save their lives. And, you know, there's a huge hormonal component, especially once a woman reaches 35 years old, and it's happening a lot sooner now, but 35 years old, progesterone crashes naturally. I shouldn't say naturally, but it is crashing around that age. And estrogen is dominating. Even if you have low estrogen, it's still dominating. But all of these functions, all of this hormonal function, all of this takes place in the gut, in the liver, in the gallbladder. And when your liver is, you know, it's got 500 functions, and the first function is metabolizing, breaking down fat. And the second, in this order, in this prioritized order, is, you know, dealing with conjugated estrogens and hormones. And when your body is burdened with garbage oil, whether it be from Panda Express or the olive oil that's sitting over your stove for the last 7 months that has, you know, rancified, your liver and your gallbladder still have to take on that toxic burden. And that becomes such a congester. It congests the liver so much. And then it makes it really difficult for your body to break down and to lose fat, to lose weight.
Yeah.
So can you speak any more on the hormonal factor to the oil-free diet?
Yeah, absolutely. I actually have a history of PCOS as young as, I mean, I think by the time I caught it, I was about 19 years old. I was in college. But I have a history of having menstrual cycles, one cycle every 4 to 5 months. Wow. And when I really started working on my health was really right after that, when I was 19 years old. And I had, you know, transitioned over into a plant-based diet and then went a little bit more paleo. I was eating meat. I was eating a lot more fat. And then I transitioned back into plant-based. But when I made that final transition, there was no oil in any of my diet. And at that point was really when I began to really see how powerful this was. My menstrual cycles completely re-regulated. I had no, I don't want to say no more, but I had about a 70% decrease in the amount of premenstrual cramping that I would experience, PMS, all of the symptoms that I had that were affiliated with my personal menstrual cycle and everything that I had gone through had decreased significantly. So I was able to really uncloud the confusion within my endocrine system and my hormones, because one important factor I do want to mention is that processed oils, let's just say vegetable oils or, you know, oils in general, they're mostly omega-6. And omega-6 is going to be an essential fatty acid that is much more known to be inflammatory, whereas omega-3 essential fatty acid is anti-inflammatory. So for a lot of us that are consuming oils within our food, they're going to have the omega-6 inflammatory factor. So the body's going to become more inflamed. And majority of us, more than 90% of Americans are walking around chronically inflamed. They just don't know it. So the more inflamed we are, the more alert the body is in, the more the nervous system is stressed out, and the more misconfiguration we have within the entire hormone system. So for me personally, and as I've witnessed with other clients who are females and even males, when they have eliminated the processed oils from their diet, their body goes through the transition. It's almost kind of like an infection die-off phase that can take anywhere from 30 to 90 days to really adjust fully. And once you reach that 30 to 90 day mark per individual, you feel like you're just so clear, you're so alert, you're so energetic, your hormones feel like they're balanced, you feel just fully grounded, your face is flushed with blood flow, the stagnant tissue that you had that was sloughing up your lymphatic system is no longer there. You feel so fully alive, as long as you're still consuming whole fats from whole foods.
So explain to us, like, how would you get the necessary, you know, required amount of that? Because that's, you know, that's especially for someone who's paleo, that's a lot of fat. How do you acquire without a refined oil or a processed oil?
What I love to incorporate within my diet and for my clients as well, to replace oil, who doesn't love avocado? We all love avocado. Avocado is number one for me. I love to incorporate hummus. I love to incorporate lentils and legumes. And that's also really where the raw butter comes in as well. Almonds, even. What are some other ones that I have? I'm not a huge fan of macadamia nuts, but the nuts and seeds come into this play as well. And it might seem a bit more plant-based for, you know, depending on what diet you're coming from. And it totally takes adjustment. This is not something that you can just do overnight. It's something that I did overnight because I'm just like that. I'm very extreme with diets. I love to really just dive in and see what this is all about and kind of just skip the transition part. But for the everyday individual, this totally is a transition. You do have to do some research and really understand what foods provide you with what foods are protein abundant, what foods are fat abundant, and begin incorporating more of those things. Like I said, nuts, seeds, definitely avocado, hummus, and incorporating more of those things into your daily diet, maybe more than you would. Because in a sense, if you're eliminating anywhere from, I mean, realistically, people consume anywhere from 2 to 4 teaspoons to even tablespoons of olive oil a day. That's anywhere from 400 to 1,000 calories for some people. So you have to make that up in food if you're looking to maintain weight. And that's kind of where some calculation comes in. If you're not really the individual who wants to calculate your food and you don't really monitor that, okay, no big deal. But if you do have a goal that you're trying to achieve that does include weight, you are going to learn, or you're going to have to learn how to calculate these foods and to incorporate them, whether you need to decrease or increase more of them into your diet. Really important.
So, you know, Dr. Marshall used to recommend supplementing for when you're on this diet with the DHA supplement that he has, but that's a refined oil as well.
It is.
Yeah. So what did, is there a product that you recommend or not really? Because you are a big foodie. So what do you think?
You know, when it comes to supplements and DHA, those for me are, they're going to be the exception to that. If you're working with a practitioner, you kind of want to follow suit. You don't want to deviate too much because they're working with a proven system that works for them. That's just my personal philosophy. So, for example, with Dr. Marshall's D3 and his DHA and his EFA oils, those would kind of be the exception for me if somebody were on a full protocol with a practitioner. If somebody weren't under practitioner guidance, I would totally look for other options. Okay, you can get your DHA from, you know, incorporating chia or even flax. But even
fish.
Fish itself. but you know, even for my clients that I'm specifically just working with food, I will recommend for them to supplement with it because they're still making the cleaner choice and they're still making the better choice compared to what is available. And not everybody is ready to go from one extreme to an even deeper extreme. And there's the emotional aspect there too of not wanting to give them so much of a takeaway and still give them, you know, some cushion and support in the transition that they're moving through.
Yeah. I've certainly, out of all the diets that I've worked with for 10 years, it is definitely the diet where I've seen the most dramatic weight loss in in the most healthy way.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I've seen people do like, you know, the lemonade cleanse and lose like 20 pounds in a month, but they're not eating anything for a month.
Right.
But as far in a healthy way, in a sustainable way, in a way that, that they stay consistently with that weight loss, it's been this particular diet. And I have to be honest with everybody, and I have not been able to do it for 90 days. I have not been able to do it. I've done it for 60 days, and I got through the foggy headedness. I definitely had that major, like, I can't even think phase, you know, where you just feel like, what is going on? You can't even like form a sentence and think and feel real like malaise. But I, you know, if I'm just being honest, I feel like I have been such a fat eater. Like I've been so thin my whole life, and I'm like a vata, you know, my disposition is very small boned and very dry skin. And I've always gravitated. I crave very oily drinks and oily soups and, you know, oil and fat. So I did it for a while. And then I had these like literally massive cravings where I would, you know, dream of eating just the fat part off of a ribeye, you know, just like
a fat attack.
Yeah, fat attack, exactly, and which is not good either. So I still have yet to, and you know, I'm sure it would help me with the hormonal issues that remain for me, but I've yet to take it on. So it is challenging, but I think that with people who want, who want dramatic change in their life, I think it's a good one for
Yeah, it's really awesome, and you know, I experienced those moments too. Where, you know, I'm oil free and I'm doing my thing, I'm working out, I'm staying busy. And all of a sudden I'll be like, oh my gosh, I need some freaking butter. Or, oh my gosh, I need some fish.
Yeah.
And I'll go for it and I'll totally go for it and just have fun with it. And a lot of the time what I realize is, oh, you know what? I think I'm craving fat, but I'm actually craving protein for me specifically. And I don't know if anybody else has experienced that. I haven't asked my clients specifically about that. That really hasn't come up. But oftentimes we consume fat with protein together, whether it's meat, whether it's fish, or even having just an egg. Those components are in there as well. So I have experimented with that. Even though I'm craving fat, I'm going to try to have some protein that still has fat in there. And often that will take care of it for me as well. Just me being in tune with myself. And I always love to experiment.
Yeah. You know, I wanted to share with our audience the fact that, you know, you're not this like person who doesn't spoil yourself and that you're not somebody who, you know, is like starving themselves and just eating seeds and like a bird. You know, Tanisha actually bakes. She has this entire whole, like, I think you should do a cookbook is what I think. It's oil-free baked goods. And it's astounding what she has created with this oil-free way of making, you know, of decadence. And, you know, we have this perception that, you know, decadence means, you know, we have to have butter and oil and tons of sugar and, you know, and it's not the case at all. And so I want you to tell everyone how they can reach you if they wanted to hire you as a practitioner, because I think that this is something you have an incredible gift for, which is literally going into people's homes or helping them go into their home and actually redecorating their cupboards inside.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I do love to bake. My number one mission is really teaching people how to reclaim their right to health through food and really teaching people that they can still live in their level of comfort with food without destroying their body. And I think that's a huge misconception of health, something that I really battled with for 10 years, just really trying to understand what it was like to feel good and look good at the same time, and realizing that every single program that I did taught me nothing. They taught me no skills of how to create foods that not only sustain my body feeling good, but that actually tasted good. And I think that there's a huge misconception in the health and weight loss fields that people have just been so strained by, that eating healthy doesn't taste good. And my mission is to prove that wrong with people. When I work with clients, I work with them for weeks at a time, sometimes even months, just depending on where their starting point is and how far they really want to go. And giving them the tools and the foundation of how to sustain their level of comfort within food, within their own kitchen, but with a modified way, and really finding empowerment with that. And what I love about food and people, and really teaching them and teaching them these concepts, is that it's never about the food. It's never about the food. It always goes back to where they're at within their heart and where they're at in their childhood. And that's what makes this process so beautiful. Because they're able to really heal within themselves as they're healing themselves with food. And it's really it is a commitment. It is a lifestyle transformation. So if you are in that place where you're looking to really not only transform your physical body, but your mind, your body, your spirit, and your entire reality of life, food has everything to do with it. And you can go to my website, Healthy Humans, and that's humans with a Z. So healthyhumansconsulting.com. I do have two different web pages, and that's much more of my my business page. But if you just want to go to my blog spot, you can go to healthyhumans.com, and that's Healthy Humans with a Z. I'm also on Instagram as well. And you can reach out to me there if you guys have any questions, and if you guys want to work together. Even if you're out of California, you're not in LA, I work with people all around via Skype, via phone. And I love helping people really understand that food can still be comforting to them, even when they're looking to change their lifestyle for the better.
That's fantastic. I'm so glad we did this. That was just so enlightening. I mean, the whole dental thing is always such a... You know, it's so profound when you learn it, but then, you know, every once in a while I'll start to talk about it again, and it blows my mind. It's just so amazing and scary, and it's fantastic information for people to have, you know?
It is. It's so intriguing. And the beauty about dental is that everybody's situation is so diverse from one another. And there's not one thing you can't learn from everybody's dental situation.
Yeah. Yeah. We all have such different, right?
Constantly growing.
What is the name of your dentist, even though we'll put him in the show notes, but I just want people to hear his name.
Sure. It's Dr. Gary Larson, and he's all the way up in Clovis, which is in Fresno. So I literally drive from LA to Fresno to go see this guy. That's just how good he is. He is awesome.
Wow.
I love him. He's really heart-centered, very faith-centered as well. And he actually transformed his entire practice from conventional dentistry years ago to much more bio-based, bio-identical bio-dentistry. And he transformed everything. And he is definitely a gem. I'm so grateful for him, for really him saving my life.
Oh, man. Well, we're grateful for him, too, because I know he's going to get flooded with phone calls and questions and hopefully appointments, because I get this, probably get an email 3 or 4 times a week from people asking me, oh, I listened to your original podcast about dental, and I'm so curious, you know, where do I go? What do I do? And it's so nice to have a resource. And I do know plenty of people. I mean, you and I both know people
absolutely.
Who have literally remortgaged their homes so they can go to see a good dentist.
Oh, yeah.
And that is the reality. That's the reality. Yeah,
it is. And if you're listening right now and you find that you're in a dental situation and you go get looked at, whether it's not my dentist or somebody else that does good work, like what we're talking about, and you reach a point of panic. I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know how I'm going to afford this. You're not alone. There are so many people that feel that way, and they feel panicked in which way to turn and what to do. And the best thing to do, like Dr. Marshall would always say, remain calm, remain calm. All will pursue, and you will be granted with the greatest help, however it needs to come. And just know that you're doing the good work for yourself and for your future.
I think that now with the GoFundMe pages and things like this, I think it's a brilliant way for people to reach out who are really in a, in a bind, you know. I think it's a great, anyway, Tanisha, thank you so much. Thank you so much. I'm so grateful. And I really hope people give you a call, because I think you can really help people change their lives and their health. And I'm just, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much for making this happen. It's been a wonderful journey knowing you and just knowing your journey and just watching you thrive with your podcast and your following and your entire knowledge base. So amazing. Thanks. So I feel honored to be on here.
Oh, thank you.
You know what? I can give you, should I give my phone number?
Sure.
Okay, sure. I'll give you guys my phone number. You guys can reach me at 424-259-3523.
Perfect. Hopefully no weird, creepy people will call you.
Yeah, no worries. It's a filtered phone call, so I actually have to approve the call.
Okay, good. Not that we have creepy weirdos listening, but you never know.
You never know.
So. Awesome. Thanks again, Tanisha. We will speak soon. I can't wait to talk to you more about our commonality with the whole herpes spine thing. That's wacky.
Absolutely.
Okay, good.
Absolutely. Thank you, Catalina.
Bye. Love you.
Bye. Love you.
I told you, you're going to love her. She's amazing. Just so good, right? I mean, I know the information is daunting, but it's also information that can save your life, that can save you from a lot of struggles with your health. And I hope you just got a lot out of that, because I sure did. And it inspired me to really kind of start to eliminate refined oils from my diet once again, and really try to do it for as long as possible this time, because it's challenging. It's a really challenging diet, but man, you notice the effects right away. So once again, check out the Total Gut Makeover on healthygutgirl.com. Leave us a review on the iTunes podcast. We could really use them. These podcasts do so well, the more good reviews that you have. It's just the way it works these days. And follow me on healthygutgirl_ on Instagram, at healthygutgirl on Twitter. And check me out on the Estrogen Dominance Support Group on Facebook. Lots of good info there. Just join that group. It's a private group. You're going to love it. And thank you so much. Talk to you soon.
Yay!